I see a lot of times athletes that want to be professional in their approach with it, like, oh, I have knee issues and that's a part of the sport. Mm. Well, maybe like it's a part of the sport in that it's common that the issue comes up, but it's common that the issue comes up because most athletes don't spend enough time on accessory work to work around the knees and do hamstring work and all the other stuff they need to for that not to be an issue. That's why it's common.
And I think you should be constantly paying attention, working on those things. But I do think to a degree, not where it's causing, where it's inhibiting performance or maybe affecting lifestyle, but to a degree, there is going to be an element of discomfort that you just can't get around. Yeah. I don't care if you're weightlifting. I mean, you wrestled. If you're in week 13 of your NFL season, you're going to be sore.
Right.
If you're like, your knees are going to be a little tight if you're playing basketball in the NBA. Like, there is just some things that they just come with the sport. It's not like we're some everyday person and we're not trying to literally get the most out of our bodies come game time or come competition time. The weightlifter who's doing this professionally isn't necessarily doing this to be healthy or feel good. They're trying to win championships. They're trying to get gold medals. They're trying to set American records.
Hey, it's Ben Wise, and this is The Fitness Movement. The Fitness Movement is brought to you by Soar Fitness. Soar Fitness is my company and my platform to deliver training content to coaches and athletes like you. The site has educational resources on everything from program design and exercise physiology to skill progressions and movement breakdowns. And in terms of programming, we have our online training program, The Protocol, and I also offer one-on-one remote coaching. It's all at one place, soarfitness.com. I'm really excited because today we have our first ever multi-guest interview. We have two guests who are previously on the Fitness Movement. We got Kyle Fields and Jeff Baltimore. They work together at 1440 Athletics. That's near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, a little town called Lemoyne, where I actually used to live. So I actually went to their gym for quite a while, and I know both these guys. And they work together, so they know each other very well, and they're actually sitting in the same room as we do this interview. Funny, Kyle has coached Jeff. Jeff has coached me, so... I really just kind of want to sit down and shoot the breeze with these guys, have a round table, and really have an open conversation around weightlifting and strength development as a whole. So if you really value what these guys are saying and you want to hear more from them, you can hear their full bios and the individual conversations and interviews that I've had with each of them. Jeff Baltimore was episode 22. Again, that was the first ever interview I did on the Fitness Movement. And Kyle Fields was this season, episode 54. In this conversation, I start off by asking Jeff what qualities, or maybe we call them prerequisites, are necessary for expression of top-end strength.
Number one is probably that they can even get in the positions to... So if we're talking about, let's say, like a simple back squat, full range of motion back squat, whether it's just like a CrossFit competition standard or a powerlifting standard, whatever it is, hips below parallel, can they get into those positions, whether loaded or unloaded, lightweight or unloaded? If they can't do that, it's going to be hard to, you know, hit a one rep max or push a true rep one rep max. And if we'll take the back squat, for example, can we do that with a bar on the back? Can we do that in a goblet position? Can we do it in a front rack position? Just hitting those different positions under different loads before we actually start loading up significant amounts of weight. So that would probably be number one, just ability to get in the positions we want to hit those 100 maxes. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. One of the episodes I did was episode 14. I called it high support positions. Basically, like, the idea is like you in weightlifting specifically. And by the way, a little disclaimer, when we talk about weightlifting, we're talking about snatch and clean and jerk, just to make that set the ground rules for everybody. That's what we're talking about.
And bicep curls and rows.
No, that is resistance training. All right. So now I completely lost my train of thought, but, in that episode I was talking about basically like in weightlifting, you need to have these, again, I call them high support positions. Basically you need to be able to get basically transition from one sort of like explosive phase of the movement where you then get into a position where you then can support a lot of weight. So for example, like standing in a front rack, if you have good positions, that weight is supported by your skeleton, you have the ability to then be able to hold way more weight, right? If you have a bar on your back and you're in alignment versus, for example, if you're like in the sticky spot of your squat, like that's like out of alignment where it's going to be like really hard to get through that. It's not a very sustainable position versus, yeah, when basically like when your skeleton's organized in a certain way, it allows you to support way more load. So if you don't have the right positions, that's sort of square one is what I'm interpreting this as.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And it's also, I mean, like I said, the biggest thing is it's cool to get in those positions statically, kind of set yourself up so you're in the perfect spot. And I keep thinking like end range of on a back squat at the bottom. But yeah, absolutely. At the top, if I can't hold 100 kilos, let's say for a jerk, just in the front rack, it's going to be hard to get it overhead. So I guess, yeah, that support strength, that static strength, but just that positional strength. Can I stand? Can I squat? Can I bend? Can I twist? Just getting those in those positions without load or like in a non-stressful environment, that's going to be key number one.
What happens if you have somebody, they want to weightlift, but those positions, let's just call them subpar. Like where do you go first there?
That's probably going to be a question for Mr. Kyle Fields.
I'm all right, Coach say, Fields, what do we do?
Well, the only thing that I was thinking the entire time was like, I think it comes down to time spent doing it before you even get to that point.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like if you could like come
time
in
the position, you're saying?
Like time, kind of. So what I mean is like, if you have someone come in on day one and they hop into your 4:30 PM CrossFit class.
Yeah.
And the workout of the day is to work to a one rep max or a heavy single of a back squat. They're probably not working to a one rep max or a heavy single of a back squat that day. And you're probably not pushing someone to do that for a substantial period of time, even if they just walk in and have crazy perfect positions. So they haven't learned how to move a load at all, even with those perfect positions. So I think that time spent is kind of like prerequisite number one. And then you can kind of check the boxes of, yeah, they have those perfect positions. They're comfortable there. They can support static up top. And then you can kind of start to push from there. I don't know if that answers your question or not. That's what I was thinking the entire time.
Yeah. And at the same time, I mean, at the end of the day, anyone can hit a max effort lift or movement, and it will be max effort for them. Right. So for me, if I hit a max effort deadlift, I'm going to be fried for 2-3 weeks. I swear. But you could have someone new come in, hit a max effort deadlift, give them a cue, and 5 minutes later, they'll PR. Give them another cue, and 5 minutes later, they'll PR. Like, it's just, it's so new to them that they can't get the most out of their system. So in terms of, I don't know what the trade-off would be. Like, because like I said, anybody can do it, but the efficiency of getting the most out of what their body is capable of.
Yes, time spent.
It's time spent. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And I think that's a good, important part of the conversation for people is like, you know, if you haven't done thousands and thousands of reps, like accumulated your time and just put in some work for a while, like, yeah, like why even try to put a peak on that pyramid, so to speak? Like, it doesn't really make sense. And a lot of the stuff, like, again, especially even people in CrossFit, this happens all the time, where like people are lifting in a Metcon and they get up to like, you know, they hit a new PR and they're doing some ladder in a Metcon. It's like that should never happen. But like often it's like they're not thinking as much, right? Like it's more of a, just like they haven't spent so much time working on their technique and like that one specific movement, and their maximal strength isn't that high where they can kind of get away with some of that stuff. And you see some of that weird kind of stuff happening, which you see with beginners that you don't see with more advanced people.
Yeah. And it's kind of like with the newer people. Like I'll hear things like at the end of the training session, oh, it wasn't a good training session. I only PR'd by 10 pounds today. Like I hate hearing stuff like that because it'll take me like 3 years to PR by 10 pounds. But at the same time, it's not even that they're getting stronger. They are, but it's less that they're getting stronger and more that they're just learning. Like their nervous system is learning, their body's learning.
So let's say that we're dealing with somebody and they've gotten over some of like the beginner gains, let's call them, right? They've been around a little bit. They've been training for a while, right? Maybe their technique isn't super refined. Maybe their positions aren't perfect. Like even like most people that you see come in, even if they've been training a while, like even me, like I've been training for a while. I've been doing weightlifting. I've been trying to improve my snatch, my clean and jerk, my back squat, all these numbers for a long time. And yet my positions aren't perfect. There's a lot of stuff I could do on a day-to-day basis that would improve that stuff. So after someone's like gotten some of the practice in where like they can actually put in a good effort into a lift and like actually express pretty well, Kyle, what do you think might be some of the ways that you can go from like maybe a program design perspective in terms of like how you can get them to start to maybe not peak, but to start to sharpen that a little bit?
I think it depends on what the background is. So if the training background is a lot of full movements, so like full snatch, full clean and jerk, if you're just talking about snatching and clean and jerking, or even back squatting, it's just a normal back squat, bend your knees at the bottom, come back up. There's no variation to it at all. You can add variation, add positional work, things like that. If it's the other side of the spectrum where like a lot of times in a class or something like that, it's a lot of hang work, a lot of barbell cycling, things like that. They're not touching the full movements. You can go about it that way. But it's also going to depend a lot on where the issues are, what needs to be sharpened. And most of the time for people, it's probably going to be pretty focused position work for a while. And then you kind of start push it into just most of your volume is full lifts. But yeah, I think a lot of it depends on where they came from and what they were doing before to get to the point that they're at now.
So might that be like in more of a building phase in their training, they're not super close to competing, that, you know, they're doing more stuff that is provoking the stuff that they're not great at, like their positions.
Yeah. So here's an easy example. Let's say you are in a portion of your training where you have the open in March, and now's the time where you want to start focusing on strength. Maybe you're taking like 12 weeks just to be really simple. And that the goal at the end of that 12 weeks is to snatch more, clean and jerk more, squat more, whatever, your strength qualities are going to go up. Probably the first 4 to 6 weeks of that, you can pair a lot of strength work with a lot of technical work. And that's the time where you're going to try and find the parts that you're bad at and expose the weakness in that, in the snatch and clean and jerk. In the meantime, that's probably when you're doing a good amount of volume in the squats, 10s, 8s, things like that. And then the middle ground phase, you're going to transition over a little bit where maybe it's some complex or positional work that's still trying to sharpen those things. And now we're starting to touch the full lifts a little more, but that's mainly to just make the connection between what you're learning and what you need it to end up to be. And then your strength movements are going to be middle ground. Maybe that's 5s, 5x5, 3x5, something like that, really simple. And then maybe in the last couple of weeks, you're doing more full lifts, and those variations that you're doing are just to keep the thing sharp that you learned in the previous 6, 7, 8 weeks. And then your squatting, you know, works into 3s, 2s, 1s, whatever. But yeah, it's early ground is focused on the problem. Middle ground is connecting the problem. And then end ground is taking what you learned and putting it into practice.
So I think that that's a really helpful model for like people. If they're like, all right, over this period of time, I'm really trying to, you know, improve my weightlifting work, right? Let's say we have somebody like Jeff, and either of you could field this question, and your off season, let's just say it's like 12 months or 11 months, right? Basically, like you have a competition and like you go like this long period of time until you're going to compete again. Obviously, you're going to take some time off and like recoup and all that stuff. But like once you actually get back into training, like take that like basically breakdown of what you just gave me. Like, what does that look like for a more experienced lifter who like they're like that building phase might be 6 or 8 months out of their year?
Do you want to try and answer that?
No, I'm going to get this wrong. So this is not the answer to the question, but when obviously I coached CrossFit, and then when I was competing weightlifting, it was as an athlete. When I was competing, I didn't, not that I didn't know what was going on, but I kind of just didn't really worry about what was going on. That's not, it wasn't my job to worry about. So whatever Kyle put in the programming, for the most part, is just what I did. I have an idea in that, like he said, a lot of stuff for me was strength work with very, very light, maybe like 70-ish percent, 75% technique work, pauses, positional complexes and stuff, which I feel like really helped me because it was always my consistency in the movement patterns for snatch and clean jerk, which I kind of think is for most people, but it was always pretty light. And then we progressed in weight, the strength movements, like the pulls and the squats and stuff took a step back. And then the competition movements got heavier and heavier. And then 3 or 4 weeks out, we're hitting those higher percentages pretty consistently leading the competition. Specifically, I don't know what that looks like, but generally that's about what we were doing.
So it might be like a similar type thing. It's just like more intensive in each stage. Is that fair, Kyle?
Yeah. So one, I think you have to assess if there's any like ability to handle the capacity that dropped off from whatever your all season was. So if it's 6 months, like Jeff's notorious for taking 6 months or something like that, and then he ramps back up to compete again a year later. If there was a huge drop off in like the capacity that can handle. So like if we're used to doing 350 reps in a week, and when we come back, 200 is going to just bury us into the ground, we have to take the time to build back to 300, 350, whatever. That takes a little bit of time to get to. After that point, for him specifically, strength was the foundation of everything that he did. He was really fast. His positions were not elite for the weights that he was moving. Doesn't mean he moved bad, but like, and I think to most people's eye, when they look at him, they're like, wow, that's amazing. But when you're trying to snatch 140 plus kilos, everything has to be pretty precise in that. So of course, we're always trying to improve those positions and stuff like that. But for him, the foundation that allowed him to snatch 140 wasn't because he was a high level technician, it's because he was really strong. So we would build that base back, that strength base. And then for him, it was just maintaining that, like understanding his residuals. And we could, just work up to a heavy single and a back squat once a week. And we didn't really have to back squat much more than that. And we could just spend time on position. So it's building that aspect back. And then it's pretty much those 12-week cycles or whatever, we're getting ready for competition, whatever it looks like. But yes, that beginning ground of understanding where he's at when he comes back into training.
And one thing I think was a big help was that, I don't know if 350 was exactly the number, but however it was divided between snatch, clean, jerk, the main lifts, I think we just did so many reps early on and they continued throughout the cycle. But if you have, no matter what stage it is, if someone's doing 300 reps a week and your competitor is also doing 200 reps a week, I mean, you're getting like, in my mind, like double the practice, or because I see them as like, I come from a baseball background and I remember in school our coach was like, you need to get 300 swings a day. You need to get 300 swings a day. And it's just that repetition over and over and over again of just swinging the bat. And I kind of view weightlifting the same way. Like, yes, you need to be strong and the qualities and the attributes you need are a little different, but I see it almost as like practice. Like we're going there, I'm going to practice, I'm going to practice. And even having that mindset, I think helps a little bit because you're seeing, I got to accumulate these reps consciously and unconsciously for my body. It just has to repeat it over and over and over again. So if I work up to a point where I'm doing, again, like 350 reps a week, and someone's only able to do or handle 100 or 200 reps a week, I think we'll be better off because not only am I strong and I can handle more, but I'm actually doing more. And I'm constantly getting that feedback of things I need to work on, things I need to strengthen. Those positions are always being hit. And then when I get on the platform, it's like, I've been here thousands of times in the last however many weeks.
Yeah, I think some people mistake that as, well, if I just do more, then it's better. That's not necessarily the case.
Yeah.
But I like if we use 350 was a number for him. Where like we got the best possible outcome without any kind of negative trade-off. We were able to put in that much practice and have the level of improvement that we wanted. For other people, that's different. I have one girl where it's well over 400. I have others that it's like 200, and that's the number for them. If it's 200, we may try and build that up. For the girl that's over 400, we're probably not going to try and build that up anymore. We're good there. But I think a lot of people take that as, well, let me just do 100 a day, and I'm going to get better than the person that does 100 a week. Maybe for like 6 months, and then you're probably going
to
be.
Yeah, done. I guess I should have prefaced that with also your ability to handle that.
Yeah.
As well. Like that's super. So building up that training base, which I think also goes back to not CrossFit, but like your GPP, your fitness. So Kyle will probably speak on this later. I know a lot of our members have said to me, like they see a lot of those guys in the weightlifting room. Like there's the way it's set up in the gym, there's like two separate rooms. There's like a CrossFit main floor, and then there's the weightlifting room, but you can see into the weightlifting room. And you see everybody in there snatching, clean, jerking, but a lot of times for a lot of sessions, it's a lot of like physical development. Like yeah, they're practicing the lifts, but it's also like carries, core work, just accumulating reps with just their body. And I think it definitely aids in their ability to handle more work later on or later in the cycle.
Kyle, how do you determine if, besides just trial and error and maybe some athlete feedback or something like that, is there any other way that you determine, you know, where that volume threshold kind of trade-off is for an athlete?
Yeah. So we have a base number that we start at. It doesn't matter.
What is it?
I don't know if I can tell you. No, I'm just kidding.
This is proprietary information.
So it's you, it depends on the phase, but maybe that's like 200. I don't want to say that that's guaranteed, just for, I'm going to say the average situation, 200. That's someone who's training, you know, 4 days a week, 5 days a week, whatever. At 200 reps, really no difference between 4 and 5. It's just because you can fit into 4, but
it's like 3 reps a session if you're training 5 sessions.
Yeah, like, yeah. So that's like the average slice in the middle. Like, they're not coming from a CrossFit background, they're not coming from like a gymnastics background. They're not like a super young kid or like someone who
they're not extreme.
Yeah. That's just the person right in the middle.
So quick question. Is that number calculated by, you know, say it's not including warmups, but maybe anything that's considered to be like more of a working set, any movement, or how do you calculate?
Yeah, isn't it like,
we use 60% or higher.
Okay.
But that's I don't count. Like, there's certain things I won't count. Like, I don't count like an RDL. It's like an accessory.
Yeah.
And like, there might be times where like we do RDLs at 60%. I really couldn't tell you. Like, I don't count it. Yeah. I'm counting snatches, clean and jerks, squats, pulls.
Yeah.
Pretty much it.
Okay.
Is that because those lifts are more nervous system demanding than like?
Yeah. So like, if I have someone do a strict press, honestly, can you even strict press 60% of your jerk? I'm not even sure. I don't know. But I'm not even programming those based off of like, it's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah. It's more like accessory bodybuilding, like tissue work than like training a movement. Yeah.
So like if I'm training and like, if I feel muscularly feel like not that good, it's really not that bad. You just got to get warmed up and you're ready to go.
Yeah.
But if we're doing sets of cleans at like 90% or like some heavy back squats, I'm not going to be that sore, but I'm like fried. Like the bar is not moving fast. So like that would definitely wear on me more. But even if I'm like, I have some DOMS or like my hamstrings are a little tight, I mean, you can be fine with that, honestly.
Yeah. So you'd rather do 200 wall balls and go clean and jerk to a max the day before than sleep 5 hours and go clean and jerk to a max.
Yeah, absolutely.
60%. That's our number. Like,
yeah,
this is what I use there. I mean, other countries, like my understanding is like a lot of the Russians before used like 70%. I've heard rumblings that like the Chinese don't even count it. It feels like 80%. I don't even know if that's true. It sounds like a crazy stat, but like, it's just what we, yeah. It's just the way
you have to make a cutoff somewhere.
Well, yeah, as long as it's measurable, we know like 200, like it doesn't matter. Like if you're someone who counts at 50%, it's going to be higher. But as you adjust those numbers for someone, as time goes on, it's just mismeasurable. That's all it is.
Yeah. So one of the things that I've noticed for people is that there's sort of this sweet spot, like we're saying, like below a certain threshold, doing more will just to help everything. Above a certain threshold, it gets worse. If you're in the sweet spot, one of the things that I've noticed for people is if they just do more reps, more frequency, more reps, their positions improve. And I think that's counterintuitive to a lot of people. In your mind, either of you, what factors is really, chalking you up to, like, if you just do more reps, you actually might improve your positions for the sport?
Yeah, I think there definitely is a trade-off. And I think it goes back to your ability to recover. Like, where is that perfect sweet spot at? And I also think it depends on the movement. So for me, the more frequency I get with snatching, I think the better my snatch gets. The more intensity, and Kyle probably talking this better for me, but when I snatch more frequently, my snatch gets better. But when I clean and jerk more intensely, I think my clean jerk gets better. So if I work up to a heavy clean jerk, maybe half as often or a third as often as my snatch, I think I'm able to maintain that clean jerk as long as I feel that load every once in a while. But for me, when I snatch, I got to hit that like a lot. And I'm sure it's different for every athlete. I think it depends on the athlete, the workload, and the lifts you're talking about.
So let me throw in my two cents and then I'll ask Kyle if he disagrees with me. So I would interpret that as, and I actually completely, I'm in the same boat as you, where the more technical the movement is for me, if I hit it more often, that is usually helpful, and a less technical, more like, I don't know how to describe it, but like maybe like
strength-based movement or something.
Yeah. Like truly like a simple movement that is like purely strength and has very little skill involvement, like a rack pull or a deadlift or a yoke carry or something. Yeah. Right. Versus a snatch. Those are two very different things for me. Yeah. Doing something like pulling a heavy deadlift. Again, I couldn't even do that every week probably. But if I did, it would be very challenging to try to match that. And I'd be much better off doing that at a lower frequency. Whereas there's more skill in a movement, it's more technical aspects that's more helpful to hit it more frequently. So Kyle, do you agree or disagree?
And also at the same time, I know I don't do the same things like I probably should be doing. So let me say that. Like if you look at if we're in a comp, and you look at my snatch warmups on paper and look at my clean and jerk warmups on paper, you'd be like, what the heck is this guy doing? So I think it's very individual. There's definitely a template, but.
Are you saying you don't warm up much?
No. Saying that.
It's actually amazing.
It depends. It depends on the lift. Depends on the lift. We have some wild clean and jerk warmups and some different snatch warmups, but in the session and over the course of a cycle, like it changes for me. I need to snatch more often. I need the clean and jerk heavier.
I think that's going to be individual. I don't disagree, but let me add some context. So when Miranda dropped, and it's interesting, she's sitting right next to me as I tell her story, but when Miranda dropped from 55 to 49,
it's like 14 pounds or something.
Something, I don't know, something along that line. It was over a good period of time. It was very calculated. But really, our goal was obviously to lose as little as possible in that process of going down off our snatch and clean and jerk. So normally your snatch frequency is higher than your clean and jerk frequency, just because it's a nervous system. That's just how often you can handle that. I mean, you can, I think most people, and that's full snatch, full clean and jerk. You have plenty of times where, like, probably if you take clean and jerk related movements and add them together, it might be even more than snatching, but like full snatches, full clean and jerks, how often you're doing that. I took hers and matched them the exact same, the amount of reps that she did every single week of snatch related exercise and clean and jerk related exercise were the same. And a lot of weeks her clean and jerk related exercises were more, because we knew that if we could get to the other end of it and snatch even close to what we were doing, she's going to be just a tip off of the American record. Clean and jerk wise, though, it was our worst, like, lift, the two, even as a 55, and now we're going to go down in body weight. And that's the one that always takes the hit. Like, every time you get out of weight class or change weight classes, typically that's when you're going to see the loss on. So I just upped the shit out of the frequency. So I don't know if I'm allowed to cuss. The opposite ended up happening. We lost stuff off our snatch, probably a little more than what I thought she would. And her ability to clean and jerk got better. Even though she was down 15 pounds. So, and I think there's an individuality aspect to that. And my point is, if I took that and gave that to Jeff, it would be a completely opposite outcome. Like, I don't think he would be able to handle it with what he's doing. I think the only reason she was is one, lifestyle factors. She's 17 years old. She goes to school, eats, sleeps, and trains. That's it. And then you have Jeff, who has full-time job, has life commitments outside of work. And he's 30 or close, and has a training age of like 50. So like those big things are different. So there's really high individuality to it, but, back to what you were saying with, like, I just say the technical movement and add frequency to it. That's literally all we did. We just doubled the frequency almost of how often she was doing it. We did some other stuff from a strength work perspective and came out the other side where she's clean and jerking better than what she was with 15 pounds on, and that's on a 110 pound frame. So yeah.
So typically when people, like, yeah, like you're saying, if they go down a weight class or lose some weight, like their legs tend to go away, so to speak. Like, I feel like their squats are hit the worst, which makes sense. Yeah. Like, that this the clean jerks, your clean's a pretty demanding leg driven movement. So that's interesting. I want to go back to what Jeff said about his warm-ups. So
I can tell you his warm-ups.
I'm just imagining, like, you do a bunch of reps with an empty bar, and then it's just like you start building and you take pretty aggressive jumps and you just go right up to it. Is that about it? Like, what does that look like?
So I do, like, as far as on clean and jerk, I'll say it is after the snatch, but let's say it's just like if I was just doing a clean and jerk, I'd always make sure like all the joints are feeling good, everything's warmed up. Like, I'll jump rope for like 5 minutes before anything, hit all my positions, make sure everything's feeling good. And that honestly probably takes 20 minutes. At that point, I put my shoes on. And then, like, I'm pretty thorough with the barbell. Like, I'm overhead. I hit, my hamstrings under load, some RDL, some good morning, some back squats, some press and stuff. But once everything's feeling warm and good, like, we're loading up weight pretty quickly. Yeah. And we're at 90% in about five jumps or so.
Yeah. Like, I mean, honestly, I know that might not be ideal for a lot of people, but that doesn't surprise me at all. Like, if you've got the positions and they feel good, you can, like, load them up pretty quickly. And if your technique is, like, it is what it is sort of thing, where it's not going to, like, change a whole lot based on you taking big jumps. Like I see that as almost advantageous to take less building sets.
Yeah, I think I think we changed it up a little bit for the last competition was the Arnold in March. But we've had training sessions where we worked up to like 160. So that's like 350. And it would be, let me go some pounds, like 135, 225, 265, 305, and then,
yeah, it would be like, so like our 60. When we were at the, I think when we were at the Arnold, we did 155, 245, 285, 330, opened at 350. Which is not typical. Like normally, like you're, I mean, it, you're usually like 6 to 7 warm-up attempts. That was 4, 3, 4, something like that.
Yeah.
We were also trying to keep volume off my wrist because I always had like two broken wrists, not literally, but some bad wrists going there.
Yeah. And like at a certain point, like that's again, like there's that trade-off of like taking more jumps to get there. And like you are you're still doing work, right? Like it's not maximal yet, but it's still like, it's a trade-off of like getting yourself ready to actually lift as heavy as you possibly can versus like being fresh when you get there.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a more comfortable lift to do that with.
Right.
Cause like a snatch is like not completely the opposite, but it's not 4 attempts and then we go out or whatever it is. And
right.
We go
out. I mean, if you think about someone who's going to back squat super heavy, like that's usually what they do. They just kind of like keep adding plates in those sort of intervals, right? If someone's going to go back squat up to 1,000 pounds, they just keep throwing on the 45s. Like that's sort of like how you do it.
So I think it depends on the person to lift. I don't know. I've never been with Miranda in the back, but how does Miranda? I'm actually curious. How does Miranda?
You can come in frame if she wants.
I don't know if she's performing far. So she is the opposite. We do a lot of snatch warm-ups. I'd probably say, so here's an example.
Oh, yeah.
Like we were just at in Vegas, where she won senior nationals and junior nationals. In her session, she was the last person to open, and I think there was 11 people in the session. She started warming up the same time as everybody else and didn't open till the end. So like 30 minutes before she was on the platform, like 30 minutes with a bar. And then we had, you know, another 10 minutes of 15 minutes of all the other stuff that we do before that. So drastically different. But again, that's the difference of the way that she trains, the way that she's programmed, what works best for her, and the way that he trains, the way that he's programmed and what works best for him. And we just try and magnify those qualities and do what works best. If it, I mean, if it works with it, ride it out.
Yeah. Let's just say that Jeff takes like 5 to 7 attempts to get warmed up in the clean and jerk. How many might Miranda take?
So Jeff probably takes like 4 and she's probably like 7. Her clean and jerks is more typical. The snatches wise were pretty atypical, but yeah.
Is it like more like 10 in the snatch or?
So we have 3 primer sets and then maybe like, yeah, probably 10 or 11.
Okay.
Somewhere in there.
So like not even 10 kilo jumps probably.
No. We're going, he's also 49 kilos.
Yeah.
So like we're opening at like 7 mid 70s.
Right.
And snatch, so like 155. So no, I mean you're probably averaging like 3 to 5.
Wow.
Something like that.
Yeah. But that's clearly, I mean, that's a very different stimulus than jumping, you know, 30 to 50 pounds at a shot and warming up in your clean and jerk. So
well, there's no way I could do it. Yeah. I feel like I would get crushed down there.
You just gotta, I just feel like if you're warm and you're ready to go,
you're ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think with that,
he wasn't nervous.
I mean,
I think also, like I said, it depends on the movement. I'm not going to do that with a snatch. But as it gets more, as it becomes more of a strength-based movement, I think it's easier to do that, yeah. I think. So, like, we had a heavy deadlift triple in here maybe last week, and I would see people making, like, you tell them, but they're making, like, 10-pound jumps. That's, like, blasphemous to me. You're making 10-pound jumps in a deadlift?
Yeah, it would be, no, like, I'd make, like, 3 jumps. It would be, like, one, 2, 3. Well, I'd probably just keep putting on plates, but, yeah.
45s and 25s.
So, last kind of subtopic I want to get into here is, like, I think if people only weightlift when they feel good, they just never train.
Oh, my goodness.
But at the same time, like, you have to be smart and work around stuff that's, you know, aggravated or flaring up. So how do you guys think about, A, staying healthy weightlifting, and then B, if something comes up, like, how do you navigate it?
What's healthy?
You tell me. Like,
so,
okay, let's put it like performance constraints on this for now.
Okay. All right. So I think the biggest thing is, from the training side, the more frequently I train, the better I feel. I've heard things that it's like, you're not giving your body a chance to be sore because you're always like moving. I don't know what the science is behind that, but I know when I train more frequently, I feel better. And then we can talk about like the basic stuff like nutrition and sleep, also plays a part in it. And one thing I think that's not talked about is your mindset behind training. Because if I'm dealing with, let's say, like some elbow tendonitis or my wrist or my knee's a little achy, my hips a little tight, somebody could say, man, I'm feeling really beat up today. I'm not going to train, or I'm going to take it easy, or like I'm just, where they just kind of have these little tiny nagging things and mentally it just wears on them. Where somebody could be dealing with the same physical discomfort, the exact same thing, no different. And it just doesn't even faze them. Not it doesn't faze them, but they're just like, it's just part of it. I still go in and like train and perform and do what I have to do. So I also think it's how you handle pain, or how you handle discomfort, or how you handle, I don't want to say injuries, but how you handle, you know, those, you know, aches and pains. And because it's all relative. I could say I had tendonitis and I'm still going to squat. Somebody could say I had tendonitis, I had to take 5 weeks off.
Right.
So
one of the things that Kyle and I talked about when I had him on was like, you know, like they're in some ways like a recreational lifter and someone who's treats themselves as a professional are the same, right? Like they want to get better, they want to improve, but in some ways they're like different as well. In my mind, this is probably one of the ways that they're different. Like, if you're having an athlete who is a recreational lifter, they're like, man, my wrist feels a little funky today. Like, you know what? I'm just not going to lift today. And it's like, great, dude, like go for it. In my mind, it's like, if you're a professional, like you're going to have to learn how to deal with mechanical pain sometimes and know how to like when those signals are meaningful and when you should just kind of shut it off. Kyle, thoughts?
The biggest key is you have to understand why. So like if you're having something that is like an elbow tendonitis thing, I don't think it's as easy as saying like, yeah, I have elbow tendonitis because I trained so hard. Let's go train hard. Like it's a part of it, but it's not necessarily a part of it where it's ignored. Like you have elbow tendonitis for a reason. And that could be because you just upped your frequency of training. That could be because you change something from the way that you're moving, or you caught a clean, like something. But typically down the line, there's some issue. We're tightening our front rack. We're doing something when we're receiving a bar. Like, if there is a reasonable answer to the question as to why it happens, you have to address that and not necessarily just take it as, yeah, it is what it is, and I just train hard, so that's what it's going to be. That doesn't necessarily mean that every time something comes up, we say, oh, something's horribly wrong. Let me stop what I'm doing and try and fix that and not do anything else. It's concurrent in the way that that happens. But I see a lot of times athletes that want to be a professional in their approach with it, like, oh, I have knee issues and that's a part of the sport. Mm. Well, maybe like it's a part of the sport in that it's common that the issue comes up, but it's common that the issue comes up because most athletes don't spend enough time on accessory work to work around the knees and do hamstring work and all the other stuff they need to for that not to be an issue. That's why it's common. So yeah, I mean, recreational lifter or athlete in general, if it may not be as concurrent, like if we have something come up and it's, I have an IT issue, let's stop squatting and just do powers this week and address that issue. Someone else who is more of a professional approach, hey, I'm having IT issues. Okay, let's address those issues, but we're still going to try and push to the best that we can and try and stay as pain-free as we possibly can. So that's the biggest difference for me, is one's going to be more concurrent with the approach. One, you might say, okay, let's remove that thing completely with you. And we'll just worry, you know, rehab that thing or whatever it's going to be. Hopefully that makes sense.
And I think you should be constantly paying attention and working on those things. But I do think to a degree, not where it's causing, where it's inhibiting performance or maybe affecting lifestyle, but to a degree, there is going to be an element of discomfort that you just can't get around. Yeah. I don't care if you're weightlifting. I mean, you wrestled. If you're in week 13 of your NFL season, you're going to be sore.
Right.
If you're like, your knees are going to be a little tight if you're playing basketball in the NBA. Like, there's just some things that they just come with the sport. It's not like we're some everyday person and we're not trying to literally get the most out of our bodies come game time or come competition time. I mean, if Miranda, who's training for Junior Worlds, is 3 weeks out, she's probably not going to feel her absolute best. But at the sacrifice of that, it could mean she could perform at her absolute best. So again, yeah, that's where the professional or the recreational trade-off is. If I'm just a recreational, I'm trying to get healthy and exercise, and I'm using weightlifting as my outlet, I'm not going to want to deal with some shoulder pain or elbow tendonitis because I'm doing this to be healthy and feel good. But the weightlifter who's doing this professionally isn't necessarily doing this to be healthy or feel good. They're trying to win championships. They're trying to get gold medals. They're trying to set American records. So you got to find out, like Kyle said, what's the why? Am I trying to do this to be healthy and move well and feel good? Or am I trying to be the best in the world? And if you're trying to be the best in the world, you got to deal with certain things that some people aren't willing to deal with.
I'm ready to run through a brick wall.
You know what I mean? Let's go.
Yeah, but I mean, you do see that too. Like, there's some people who are just like, you know what? Like, if this is what it's going to take, this is what is going to, you know, I'm willing to put into it. But then at the same time, like, you see those people and sometimes they run into something that's more catastrophic. So I think maybe we could delineate a little bit and say, like, you know, there's definitely stuff like you're going to deal with mechanical pain if you are dealing with a sport where you're lifting as most as you possibly can. Like, that's going to happen. However, if you want to act a professional, you also need to do everything in that you possibly can to make sure that that stuff isn't happening, or that it's minimized the most it can, and that it's not something that will derail your performance, take it off the tracks because now you're dealing with something that's more major. Kyle, is there a way that you can coach an athlete to be able to distinguish between those two things?
Man, I wish. There, one, you got to know them really well. Like, if everyone verbalizes their pain and discomfort differently,
Yeah.
So like I've had athletes that have like literally like torn an ACL, not weightlifting, tell me that like their knee is sore. And then they weightlifted for 4 months with the torn ACL before they even knew they had the torn ACL. It's like, how's your knee today? Like, oh, it's a little tight. Right. And that's an extreme. I've only ever seen something like that one time. That's Nick. And then I've had athletes that like, they had 3x10 the day before and their quads are really tight and knees are a little like creaky and cranky from it. And they have a knee injury. So like, how do you determine those two over time and learning about that person and the way that they verbalize the things that they're feeling? Because it always goes from like one thing to the other. So like you could have an athlete that good for them means I'm sore, but really good means that they probably just feel normal.
Yeah.
And then on the other end, you could have athletes that are like, I am really, really sore. Man, it's just normal. And then they, oh yeah, absolutely horrible is like, they're actually sore. And that's just so different with everybody. I wish there was a way for us to just be like completely measurable of like, yes, this is how you're feeling today. And we know it. I mean, I do use stuff on Train Heroic that asks them like readiness questions. It's a score out of 5. Whoop is great. In trying to navigate some of those things. One of the more useful things that I've started to use in training to help us actually know how the body's responding, we use velocity for some stuff. Then how you feel, it's kind of irrelevant.
I like that because it's not subjective at all. It's like, did you move 75% at this speed this day? Did you move it at this speed this day? And it has the data right there where it's like, oh, I don't really feel well today.
Yeah, that's probably the most useful tool that I have. And actually determining if someone feels good or not injury wise though. It's tough.
It is tough. It reminds me of that episode of The Office where Jim and Michael are trying to determine how they give out raises. And they're like, the whole office is mad at them. And Michael comes into his office, Jim's office. And he's like, oh my word, this is awful. And Jim's like, where are you at today on a scale of 1 to 10? He's like, 1. He's like, what are you normally at? 10. And then he asks Jim and Jim's like, man, I'm 4. He's like, what are you normally at? 6. I feel like that is coaching like summed up.
Yeah, it is. Everybody has their own idea of like where they're at. And you say 1 to 10, but everybody's scale of 1 to 10 is,
yeah,
it's so different.
Yeah.
It's not the same scale.
So Kyle, I track a lot of that readiness stuff on a weekly basis and a daily basis on some items for my athletes. And like, I end up like, I don't really look at the absolute scores that much. Like I don't try to compare athletes to each other. It's more like week over week, like where is the athlete relative to where they were at before, which is sort of maybe an objective way of looking at like some of the stuff that they would maybe say to you. Just like dialogue that's a little bit more quantifiable. But for me, it's definitely more like athlete dependent. Like everybody's different way people respond to pain or mechanical distress is different. So like knowing the athlete and then trying to combine that with some objective measures of like, how are you actually feeling and responding to training, is the way that maybe I look at it. So if you got somebody and they're dealing with, again, let's call it more than just the mechanical stress of like, you know, holding a bar in their overhead squat or, you know, doing a bunch of snatch balances or something where it's just like mechanical pain. But if they're dealing something like a hot quad or something that is just like, you know, a little bit, it's not tendonitis, but it's definitely bothersome. Like do you go to like what you mentioned before, like just start giving them powers and different variations where you just kind of work around it, or what does that look like?
Yeah. So I don't, me personally, I don't really like to guess what it is. So if I don't know exactly what's going on, we'll go find someone that does. We have a couple PTs that we work with, things like that. I think it's, honestly, I think it's disrespectful to your athletes to not have a complete understanding as to what's going on with them from an injury perspective. So they figure out what it is. If it comes back where it's something like, we really just need to lay off. We'll definitely find other ways. I can't tell you a single time where my advice to an athlete was like, just take off. Even if it's like a lower body issue, which weightlifting, everything uses lower body, there's something you can do to get better at it. But if it's something like that, yeah, I mean, we'll go to powers, we'll go to muscles. I have a guy right now that's dealing with a meniscus issue, a lot of powers, a lot of muscles, like partial range squatting, things like that. And in the meantime, he's just rehabbing the heck out of it. But we work with the best that we can. And depending on where the athlete's at from a competitive standpoint and what's next and the importance of that, we'll also kind of establish how hard we have to push through that, or even if we have to push through it at all.
All right, last question for both of you guys. I would probably argue that weightlifting is an endurance sport. To a degree, maybe not in like the immediacy of it, like in an actual lift, but like in terms of like the qualities that somebody needs, like you have to be in it for a very long time. You have to have longevity. You have to be willing to do the same thing again and again and again, and just like work at that and allow time to do its thing. What do you think like is required for somebody to like, whether they're a weightlifter purely, whether they're a CrossFitter who's doing weightlifting and other movements, like what are the qualities that allow somebody to stay in the game?
I mean, you're going to really like it. I mean, no, it's a simple answer, but so most athletes that are, let's say, reaching like the pinnacle of the sport, so that's like world championship, Olympic level. Most of them are 6 to 10 years in the sport. Some are, and I bet you the average is probably higher, like towards 10. One, I think a lot of it comes down to the mentality of it, of that it is a long-term game. If your plan is to come in and try and make the world championships in 2 years or 3 years, and you're just going to buckle down and train so hard and think that you're going to do it, you're probably not. And I think most people don't have the patience that it requires to even conceptualize what it takes to do something like that. So I think it takes a really special type of person to come in every single day and have the patience of what it's like long-term. Qualities outside of that, I don't know, man. I think it just takes a certain type of breed of person. Everyone can weightlift. I think everyone can weightlift and do really well with whatever their capability is. If you're someone who you want to weightlift and you want to go to like nationals, like I guarantee you just put in some time to it. You find the right coaching, you do things smart, you'll go to nationals. But if you're someone who's really trying to do some of the high level stuff, it just takes a certain type of mindset and comfort in knowing that it's years and years and years of the same stuff is what produces that outcome. And I wish I had a list of individual qualities that make that person up, because we would just send out a questionnaire to everybody and try and find them. But
please answer this truthfully.
Yeah, right.
All right, Jeff, you had some time to think, so your answers better be better than Kyle's.
Yeah, good.
I mean, that was it. Like you said, I hate to repeat it, but I mean, that's it. It's like, you know, the ability to have perspective and know that it's not going to be a next month or next year thing. Like, if somebody comes in and says, like, I want to be a world champion, I want to be a U.S. champion, it's like, all right, well, get ready for the next decade to dedicate your life, at least. I mean,
we're into 1 in 2 years.
I hear Kyle and Miranda talk, and they talk about, I heard Kyle talk about, you know, the next Olympic quad, like in 28. And I'm like, that's 6 years from now. It's like, to think about that and to think what we're doing now is preparing us for hopefully 6 years from now. I mean, you say it out loud, but most people can't even fathom that. They can't even, well, I'm trying to get strong for this comp next month, or I'm trying to get looking good for next summer, maybe at the latest.
I got a PR at the end of this 8-week cycle.
Yeah, like there's no, yeah,
12 weeks is no too long. I gotta cut that down.
Yeah. You know, like a 3-month cycle to people is like, man, I gotta put in these next 12 weeks. And that is like a snapshot in what it takes to be good. I mean, the best of the best in not just weightlifting, but any sport have been doing it for literally decades. Longer than people have been a lot. Like, it's just, it blows my mind to think about, but in reality, it's not. It's any discipline. It's time. And the person that can put in the most time is going to come out on top majority of the time. And you have people who are naturally gifted and have the ability to put that in. But when you combine those two and have that perspective to do it and to know that's what it takes, you know, that's when it's, you know, that's when it's something special, where you know something special is going to happen. But there's nothing special really that's going to happen in 2 months, 3 months, or even a year. Nothing really crazy is going to happen. But if you can look back 5, 10 years, 15, 20 years from now or in the future and know where you could be or how far you come, I mean, that's it right there. It's the time and the perspective, you know, like that's what it's going to take.
Gentlemen, thanks for doing this today. It was fun.
Absolutely. Always is. Mm-hmm.
Hey, it's Ben again. Thanks for listening today. To be completely honest, it's been really rewarding to have people who listen to the show regularly reach out to me, whether they have a question about training or just to say hey. So if you haven't done that yet, do it. I'm pretty good about getting back to people, and you can feel free to email me, ben@sorefitness.com, or message me on Instagram, @sorefitness. And graciously, I've had some people reach out to me and ask how they can support the show. Number one way that you can support the show if you are a regular listener is just by rating the show. Most apps have a platform where you can actually rate it, and on Apple Podcasts, you can write a review as well. This is super helpful in having other coaches and athletes find the podcast, but also just having it grow and for me to continue to want to put out more and more content. Also, I'm going to be posting more full episodes of The Fitness Movement to our YouTube channel. So if you're someone who actually enjoys seeing my face when I talk, you can head over to YouTube and subscribe if you please. And if you're someone who is watching on YouTube, you have the ability to like our videos, but then you can also comment on the video if you have questions about the episode or if you want to suggest a topic for a future episode. And lastly, if you're someone who really does value what we're putting out, I would encourage you to hire a coach. For me, coaching is the bulk of my job, and it's what I believe I do best. So if you're an athlete or a coach looking to up your fitness game, be sure to reach out. You can message me on Instagram @ZorFitness or email me ben@ZorFitness.com. Thanks again for listening today. And as always, stay the course.